the theme tonight, and the next six nights, six Sundays. The theme of five hindrances. Sorry. It's not a bit of a shift from the last themes, the previous themes, inspiring divine abidings. We're back to reality. I mean, we're back to kind of nitty-gritty of real life, or something. And first I thought, I'm trying to find some themes. I thought maybe these themes should come before the divine abidings, so that ends on an inspiring note. But on the other hand, maybe it's very fitting, because for those who've been maybe trying to develop these meditations on divine abidings, maybe you've possibly come across some of the hindrances. It hasn't been just divine abidings all the time, is it? Maybe it has. It's already a very experienced group of meditators here. So. But the five hindrances are, at least in the practical point of view, they come within the development of the four foundations of mindfulness, which you may have remembered from last year. Four foundations of mindfulness, and the last, the fourth of these categories is the what's called the Dhammas, which is another category, five categories. After one has developed the awareness, more mindfulness with regard to the body, the feelings, the states of mind, and then a bit more refinement of the states of mind, you can say, is observing particular states of mind. And the first category mentioned is the five hindrances. So it's kind of seems a little bit fitting to fit them into the development of meditation practice. Maybe not everybody has come across all of them at once, but probably in the course of your meditation practice at some time or other, you may come across some of these hindrances. Well, the translation of the Pali term for hindrance, it is a hindrance in a practical sense. These are hindrances in a practical sense. They hinder the development of the mind, they distract the mind, they cloud the mind, they keep the mind from being in a state which is more conducive to clearer seeing, to deeper concentration, to the realization of Dhamma, of truth. So they're called hindrances in a practical sense. You know, and this, this change from, having these maybe inspiring meditation topics like the divine abidings. These are very, very inspiring, very positive, very uplifting ideas anyway. But for most people trying to realize them, we come back to our human condition again, which is hindrances. I could, of course, drawn it out a bit more than five. There's quite a variety of different distractions or so-called hindrances. Now, there's the simplest one is the three roots of unskillful action: greed, aversion, delusion. And then there's the five, which is manageable. I could go on to 10, which is a bit depressing, actually. And I haven't got 5 weeks, 10 weeks to talk about them anyway, so I had to fit them into manageable portions there. But the in one of the scriptures, which is sometimes referred to as the Buddhist creation myth, I guess you'd call it, and the Buddha talks about originally human beings were beings of light, just floating around in the, I don't know where, somewhere in the atmosphere, just light beings. And then, due to lack of enlightenment and greed, aversion, delusion, gradually they came to the human condition as we know it these days, the normal human condition. And I was contemplating this, and I thought, well, isn't that a bit depressing, you know? You know, it's the great fall, you know? From light beings down to five hindrance beings, you know, five beings hindered by five hindrances. But there's another side to it as well, because even beings of light are impermanent. You can't be a light being forever. That's just reality. That's not depressing. That's reality. And the more positive part of it is that it's only as a human being that one can actually study, practice, and realize the Dhamma. We could look at, maybe you think of these light beings, oh, so lucky to be a light being, but they can't be enlightened. That doesn't work, does it? They're already light beings. Well, they can't be enlightened to the truth. That's it. They're just light, you know, physically light or something. So it's only as a earthbound, hindered human being that we can actually realize the truth. You can actually practice the Buddha's teaching. So these, you know, being a light being is just a temporary abiding and, you know, kind of a temporary holiday, you know, just like going off to Fiji for 2 weeks and coming back to windy Wellington. You got to come home again. That's where real life happens, right? At home. So we come to the five hindrances, and I mean, first of all, maybe just to make them a little bit clearer, what are the five hindrances? I mean, you can say, well, why did the Buddha choose five? I mean, just, you know, one hand, you know. So it's quite easy when you're in the forest meditating, you don't have a book, or the book's been eaten by termites, and you can look there and, oh yes, this one, yes, yeah. And you can go through the numbers. But the five basic ones, and, you know, maybe we have our own personal preference, or we have different ones even, we have to deal with sometimes, but basically, perhaps we could probably put our experience into this five categories, if you like. And not kind of absolutely all-inclusive, I think, but pretty well. The first one is sense desires. You know, this is attraction, longing, desire. And, you know, it can cover the whole range, because the way we relate to the world is through the senses. Eyes, ears, nose, tongue, body, and the mind is the sixth sense. So this is where all our relation and our impressions of the world come from, the senses. And with them, then, there is a possibility for desires and longings and wantings and attraction to arise. Mm-hmm. And, you know, usually when we're sitting here, maybe in meditation, with your eyes closed, and I have a strong smell of the flowers behind me, but usually not too much smell, and quiet and all this. You just have your mind probably mostly to deal with, maybe the body sometimes. But maybe lots of memories of previous desires. And the second one is literally ill will, which you can kind of generalize a bit more to aversion or any kind of pushing away, resistance. The sense desires is like going out to something, wanting something, and the ill will is resisting something, pushing something away. And then the third one is, we were talking this morning about this, so it's a bit of a funny phrase, sloth and torpor. We realize it's just Buddhist jargon. What is sloth and torpor? Anybody? We had to look in the dictionary. But the first one, the first one literally means, according to the commentaries, is physical sloth. So you can say maybe it's more like lethargy, just not having any physical energy or kind of depleted resources physically. That's what a sloth is, I guess. Just kind of hangs out. Of course, maybe the animal liberation people wouldn't agree with that, would they? It's a bit suggestive already, sloth. Lethargy then, how about lethargy, physical lethargy? And then there is the other one, the torpor part, is the mental lethargy. Lack of mental energy. And so this can be, this usually manifests as sleepiness, drowsiness, dullness of mind. That's, I think, generally what torpor means, but we don't use it too much these days. Don't hear it too often in the on the news at night, torpor. But I got used to it, you know, from the Buddhist jargon, so I know what it means, at least in experience, personal experience. And then the fourth one is also a double one, restlessness and worry. I think I only put restlessness on the list out there because it was too long to fit on one line, but it's actually two parts, restlessness and worry. And the restlessness, I think, is pretty understandable, huh? Restlessness. Agitation, probably more in the physical sense also. The body is overcharged with energy, or the second part of it is this worry, or it can also be translated as anxiety or scruples. That means it's more to do with seemingly the arising of remorse when one thinks about unskillfulness or thinks about negative things. And this can also, you know, reflecting or thinking about or being overwhelmed by those kind of thoughts can also lead to restlessness. It's hard to sit there when you're, you know, going through all your mistakes, right? Starts to get you jumping around and I can't stand this anymore, I gotta get out of here. And the fifth one is doubt. Doubt, uncertainty, lack of clarity. Mostly in regard to the teachings, you know, what am I doing here? You know, what's the purpose of this? Does this work? Was the Buddha enlightened? Is there just really a truth? And if the mind was just kind of dull and a bit unclear, confused, that's probably to do with worry or something, or maybe it's sleepiness or dullness or something. But this is more kind of skeptical doubt. You know, what's the whole purpose of this? Can I do this? Is it going to be useful? Will it work? It kind of paralyzes our activity, you know, paralyzes us from actually doing something. I think there is a bit of a progression in the four foundations of mindfulness. First, awareness of body, feelings, states of mind. You know, you can see a bit of a subtlety, increasing subtlety of awareness. I say kind of a bit facetiously, there's one body, three feelings, and lots of states of mind. So you need quite a bit of awareness to get a bit of clarity with regard to states of mind. And then we come to these dhammas, like, for example, the hindrances. And as one writer pointed out, I mean, you know, if your mind is kind of obsessed with, you know, with desire or ill will, a bit hard to be clear about it, isn't it? You know, that's why it's important to have a very good foundation, first of all, in developing awareness of body and feelings and states of mind. Then, ideally, then we're able to get some perspective on something like these hindrances. If we try and be aware of the hindrances at the very beginning of our practice, we're probably in them. What am I looking at, actually? Our mind is overwhelmed by doubt or by sleepiness or something. Very hard to see them. But a very good grounding in the body, for example, you know, awareness of the body, and always come back to the body. You know, what's the condition of the body? Is it lacking in energy, or has it got too much energy? Or then, oh, there is sloth, or there is restlessness. And you can get a little bit more of a handle on it. And the foundations of mindfulness, there's also a development, kind of a general development of awareness with regard to the hindrances. First of all, the first one is to be aware of them. Can we actually be aware of these various hindrances? Or, as I tried to mention in the instructions, the meditation instructions, can you actually be aware of what are these, you know, distractions that the mind takes you away from the breathing, for example? You know, what tendency of mind takes you away from the breathing? Does the mind just kind of fall flat? You take up the breathing, then just drift off it. Or you pulled away by, oh, there's a piece of cake waiting for me when I get home tonight. You know? Or there's some, you know, some ill will or distraction that, you know, I said something to somebody and it's now it's in my mind and I, you know, and righteousness comes up and the story goes on again. Or be able to get some perspective on some of this, you know, the range of different things that take us away from the breathing. And of course this requires a certain amount of clarity of mind already. And one of the hardest ones, of course, is when the mind is dull and sleepy. And then it's even a bit hard to see the sleepiness. It's just, you're in the cloud already. You know, how do you see the cloud when you're in it? The first level is trying to be aware of these various hindrances in this case. The second one is to try and observe where they come from, how they arise. Get some idea of what the conditions are behind them. And this may, you know, first of all, it requires a little bit of, at least some degree of recognition of what these are. You know, that's why I say five is reasonably manageable. You know, and maybe there's different, you know, different degrees or different, little bit of different nuances about them. You know, for example, I can tell you, I don't know, a dozen kinds of sleepiness, for example. It's not just one, there's a dozen kinds of sleepiness. Dozen kinds of ill will, you know. But to try and just get them in a kind of a general, you know, general categories or general area of understanding. Oh, this is this kind of tendency, if you like. Then to try and observe where they come from. You know, what's their source? And then how to deal with them. Once they've arisen, how to free yourself from them. You know, it's one thing to be in them, but to know how to free yourself out of them. And the fourth one is how to prevent these unskillful states of mind. Generally, they're considered to be unskillful. How to prevent them from arising in the future. You know, okay, maybe sometimes you can be sitting there and maybe in a drowsy state or something, and maybe it just fades away. Well, how did that happen? Maybe that cup of coffee just kicked in now. but maybe there was, you know, something you did. You know, maybe some inspiring thought arose in the mind, and it just cleared the sleepiness or dullness out of your mind. You know, inspiration can do that. But maybe it doesn't work all the time. Maybe it just works for some kind of lethargy, some kind of sleepiness or dullness of mind, and not other kinds. This whole developmental process, if you like, with regard to the hindrances, and I think it's a little bit of a, you know, it's a practical definition or translation of hindrance, really. But on the positive side, you know, these hindrances are very beneficial. My kind of conjecture, my understanding is that, you know, these hindrances are different aspects of ourself. These are the ways that our self expresses itself. You know, some people's, you know, tendencies, they have a very strong sense of self in desire realms, or in aversion realms, or in dullness, or whatever. And so, if we're able to actually bring some clarity and awareness to these tendencies of the self, you learn about ourself. It's like, if you like, they're being transformed now from so-called hindrances into wisdom. Ultimately, into wisdom. You know, there are three basic ways to deal with hindrances. Yeah, the first one, which usually is the kind of basic one for most people, is try and get rid of them, huh? Who wants a hindrance, huh? I mean, you don't want to say the people I got this hindrance and that hindrance, you know, you want to be, you know, I'd be free of them, get rid of them, right? Especially when you see what they are, you know, get rid of your desires and your aversion. And the second way to deal with them is a temporary suppression, which happens through developing states of concentration. By developing deep concentration, they say that in order for one to develop deep concentration, and deep concentration can only develop when the hindrances are suppressed. And this is usually only temporary. When the hindrances pass away, the mind is in a very bright and concentrated, energized state. And eventually one comes out of it, and the hindrances are right there. They aren't gone, they've just been temporarily taking a holiday. Maybe the hindrances can go to Fiji and we'll stay here. And the third way is to actually try and investigate them, be aware of them, investigate them, study them, in order to transform them into self-knowing, self-knowledge. So for those who looked at the schedule I had there, I mean, this for this theme tonight, I said working with the hindrances. So this is not getting rid of hindrances, it's not suppressing hindrances, it's working with the hindrances. So obviously you see my preference there. You know, most of us probably still have in our mind, I mean, I still have in my mind too, that working with the hindrances also means getting rid of them. See? that's the ego playing there. And basically I can say that if you try and get rid of the hindrances, don't bother, because it's not going to work. You can make the issue a lot more complicated. And we try and get rid of our desire and you know, try to get rid of desire and become a control freak. And you try and get rid of aversion and you get depressed. You try and get rid of your sloth and torpor and you just get more and more tired. Already the mind is already lacking energy and you're trying to fight your way through it and you get even more exhausted. And you try and get rid of restlessness. What is that? Try and get rid of restlessness and you get anxiety attacks. You try and get rid of your doubt. You become a fundamentalist or something. For example, something like doubt. You know, if you can transform it into wisdom, it becomes a reflective consciousness, doesn't it? Rather than just believing everything, you know, at the extreme you doubt it, so you just paralyze, but if you can engage with doubt, it can become inquiry. What's going on here? What's happening? I don't believe it. So there's an opening now to investigate and find out what's going on there. Same with all of them. They can be transformed into wisdom, actually. You know, but I realize that it's within the realm of the ego. You know, the whole realm of ego is trying to get rid of these things. You know, it's a bit humbling for your ego to accept, gee, I've got hindrances. It's a real pat in the back to your ego to say, I haven't got any hindrances now. You know, you want to triumph over them, see. But it's never going to work. And it can give a semblance that it's working. You know, like I say, try and get rid of your aversion and you end up with depression. So you got no more aversion, you just got depression. Or you're depressed about your aversion, actually, but it's just gone underground, you know. So it seems like you don't have any aversion anymore. And maybe depression's a little bit more socially acceptable these days, I don't know, rather than aversion and anger and aggression. But it's not going to work in the long term. But we have to be very careful because, you know, it's, you know, this sense of self is still functioning in the background. Like I said, even though, you know, I talk about transforming these hindrances into wisdom, I mean, still probably in the background there is, oh yeah, right, get rid of them. I mean, wisdom, right? Get wisdom then. So the sense of self is still there in the background feeding this, so you have to be a little bit careful how to work with them. And before I go into the next series, 5 Sundays, is dealing with each one of these hindrances in more detail. It could be pretty excruciating by the end. But the last one, if you hang around till the 7th one, is freedom from hindrances. There's hope at the end of the tunnel. There's light there somewhere. You know, trying to work with these various hindrances, there is important, I could say, kind of foundations or groundwork that can give very good support. I usually say to the Buddhist lay people who come here, you know, the Buddhist practice is generosity, morality, meditation. These are the kind of 3 main areas of Buddhist practice, if you like, to keep it practical. But they all work together. You know, traditionally it's been that generosity has sort of been the practice for popular Buddhists, traditional Buddhists. They come and make the offerings, and then they don't stay for meditation, they go home. But actually, all these work together. You know, generosity actually is the whole foundation of Buddhist practice. You know, on the outward form, people give things, they give offerings. But what it's leading to is giving up of ourself, isn't it? Ultimately, it's about letting go. So it starts off practically as making gestures of offering things, of giving things, which we'd normally think belong to us. You know, my food or my possessions or something, or my money or something. But it's giving up of ourselves in little ways. And this begins to create a kind of a generosity of heart, a generosity of spirit. You know, because especially with something like dealing with the hindrances, I mean, you have to kind of give up a certain amount of pride to recognize that we got hindrances, right? I mean, it's pretty humbling to recognize a greed, aversion, delusion. But if you have a generosity of spirit, it allows you to open to that possibility. There are those aspects of our being where the sense of pride and conceit is, no, I'm like this, I'm this is how I am, and it's like holding on to ourself. Generosity is like giving up of ourself. It just flows through, you know, like trying to follow the precepts, for example, too. You know, it requires quite a bit of generosity. I've got to give up my old ways of doing things. I've got to give up my old compulsions, my old habits. I've got to learn to give them up. I mean, the word sila, which we normally translate as morality, literally means habit. It's giving up those old habits and trying to cultivate, you can say, more useful or skillful habits, ways of behaving, ways of doing things, ways of relating to the world, rather than from a point of view of selfishness, now from more selflessness. Instead of killing somebody, you have to allow them to live, requires putting yourself aside, stepping outside your own ideas of your self-importance and what's right. Allow them to also have a place in your heart, in the universe. I talk about the 5 hindrances, for example. I mean, to have a good grounding in this practice of generosity, that one is able to actually open, access these hindrances. You know, I mean, I'm sure there's some people, they come to meditation and, you know, they're sitting there, you know, me, nod, are you kidding? Me have a hindrance? Are you kidding? I'm a meditator. And you can say, I saw you. No, not me. Because they just aren't able to have a generosity of spirit to actually open to the limitations of themselves and to be able to actually learn how to relinquish that as well. Maybe there's a strong identity with being the, you know, the greatest nodder maybe or something. Because it's a part of ourself. And these are expressions of ourself, and you know, kind of in maybe in a bit of perverse ways, but that's how our self expresses itself, and it's got an investment in keeping it that way, preserving itself. So having this bit more of a grounding in generosity allows us a bit more openness of heart and allows us to access some of these, you know, darker or more hidden in places of ourselves. And then a good grounding in the precepts. You know, for example, especially when it comes to something like anger and aversion, you know, to be able to access them without acting them out. You know, if we aren't have a very strong grounding in skillful behavior, then, you know, sometimes we access some of our anger or our rage or our fury or something, and we lose control. It takes us over. We end up having to act it out then, you know, to we haven't got the containment, as it were, within the precepts. You know, the precepts are just giving us guidelines for skillful living. So acting them out is not very skillful, you know, for your friends, but also for yourself. Because then it ends up reinforcing those old habits again when you act it out. So they're kind of a reminder of, you know, what is a skillful area to contain our conduct and contain our energies, our personal energies, physically and mentally. And when we have a good foundation in these kind of fundamental practices, then it allows us to be able to access in meditation some of these other aspects of our being, which normally we aren't so open to, we aren't so friendly to. There's a practice of friendliness. If you heard the talk before about metta practice, being more friendly to ourselves and all of its manifestations. Yeah, I find it very easy to be friendly to my good side. But not so easy to be friendly to the not so nice side, you know. But the hindrances now are opening to this, you can say, the more darker side, the more forbidden side of our being. You know, and the kind of irony of it is, only by opening to them can we actually go through them. Okay. Now, if we don't access them, if we aren't aware of them, then we're in them. You know, it's like they've taken us over. And we identify with them, or we're holding on to them somehow. But when we begin to become aware of them, it's like you take them out of yourself now, and oh, there's aversion, and there's desire. Instead of it manifesting and being locked within yourself, you become aware of it, you objectify it, it's over there now. You are the knower of it. You're not the doer or beer of it now. You're the knower of it. And so it takes some degree of openness and some degree of stability of mind to be able to do that. You know, if we aren't centered within ourselves, it's hard to be able to take it outside, because this, our sense of self, is identified with that as being our self, our point of reference, our stability then. You know, I am desire and I am aversion and these things. That's just how the self has formed itself, has been created in the first place. So to be able to get some perspective on these various hindrances, the irony is that when you begin to look at them, you can actually go through them. As they, you know, I guess the word hindrance is already a noun, yes. Hindrance, yes. It's already a thing. Already sounds like, okay, I'll take that one out. You know, take out desire out of this part and aversion out of that part. It's like a thing. But in reality, these are energies. These are attitudes. These are forces within us. And so to be able to actually access them, we need to be a little bit more flexible. You know, this sense like being able to become more aware of desire. You know, what is that actually? You know, to tune into some of these desires, they are, I mean, the word desire already implies a certain amount of energy, right? Desire, energy. Yeah. But for most people, it's fixed on something. I desire that thing. And that's, you know, the things change, and this desire is looking around for something else to get onto. It's, watch out, it's loose now, it's on the loose. So, but when you can actually begin to access that, you can begin to tame that energy, as it were, into something more skillful. Desire can be turned into energy now, into a positive, a right energy then, right effort, rather than being on the loose, looking for something to latch onto. It requires a certain shift of attitude, a certain openness, a certain stability, a certain change of attitude to be able to access these various hindrances. And the kind of irony is that when we actually open to them, we can begin to see them for as they really are. They're not parts of myself that I have to identify with. They become more fluid, open forces and energies which can be transformed. So we see it in a totally different way then. What before were hindrances, something to get a bit surprised about or even shocked about, hindrances. Maybe it's not, we shouldn't talk about it in a Buddhist monastery. Yeah? It's supposed to be, enlightenment, right? But the way to enlightenment is through the hindrances, to be able to access them. And we begin to see them as they really are. That's the real enlightenment. It's not getting just enlightened to Buddha, getting enlightened to what's not the Buddha. The Buddha's already there, but we don't see yet, we aren't enlightened to, is the dark side. These hindrances, we aren't enlightened to them yet. So to turn this practice around, begin to become more aware of what are these distractions, like in meditation exercise, sit down, watch the breathing. Oh, easy. But do you notice when your mind is not on the breathing? Can you watch your mind when it's not on the breathing? We want to watch the positive part, but watch when on the breathing and the mind's peaceful, but can you also open the awareness now to see when it's off it? And where is it going? What else is getting engaged in? It requires a lot more flexibility, a lot more development of awareness then. And to see what's the whole manifestation of this, where it comes from, what allows it to disappear, and what's going to actually, how we have to change our attitude, change our way of relating to reality, that they aren't going to come up again. They aren't going to keep going, keep sustaining the sense of self in its particular, those particular negative ways then, distracting ways. We can free ourselves, prevent them from arising then, enlightenment happens. It's not a matter of getting it, it's just clearing out the debris which allows it to manifest by itself. Which is probably more difficult, but but it's more real. It's what happens in the process. You say enlightenment is already there, we just kind of got a bit of debris in the way of it, that's all. See? Now we're trying to clear the debris away. But to be able to, first of all, recognize what these five particular hindrances are, and then when we get some clarity with them, we can go into them and actually begin to study them. And what before, has been called hindrances, and in practical, everyday consciousness, they are hindrances. But I say, once they get transformed, these are really precious jewels. Now, this is a source of wisdom. This is a source of self-knowing. Our self is expressing itself through desire and aversion and dullness and restlessness and doubt. Sometimes we have particular ones manifest stronger than others. So, maybe tonight you just saw, just ill will tonight maybe. But then maybe you come back next week and it's something else. So it's helpful to broaden your repertoire of when I was in Thailand and I didn't have a teacher in the first year, so I opened this meditation manual, great big thick book like this, and I was looking up, what meditation topic, because having studied engineering, I thought, well, if I get the right meditation topic to suit my temperament, presto. So this manual divides up people into, I think, six different temperaments, you see. And then there's a certain meditation object for your temperament of mind, see. So I thought, well, if I find my right temperament, I find the right meditation object, and then, zoom, right to enlightenment. I looked at these different temperaments, you know, greed, aversion, and delusion, and all these, and I realized, oops, I'm all of them. I wasn't faith temperament, though. I was all five of the negative ones, but not the positive one. I wasn't the faith temperament, but... So I only had 39 meditation objects to use then. So I thought, well, it's going to be longer than I thought, this practice. So I'm only on 29 now, I think. So got another 11 to go or something. Still working on it. So these, with the five hindrances, so, you know, the important part is to try to become more aware of them, and, you know, maybe sometime when we sit in meditation, you know, there's not much of them, not much happening. But it may be helpful to kind of take this reflection into your everyday life and just see what's your hindrance this week, or, I don't know, a little bit of homework, maybe. And see if you can observe, you know, what is the particular hindrance maybe that comes up again and again and trips you up. Yeah, it trips you up again and again and again. Because then, you know, then it can become maybe a much more relevant source of investigation or study then. You know, these things are causing us lots of, say, lack of awakening, lack of enlightenment. So the sooner we can work with them and clear them out of the way, the quicker the enlightenment will happen. So maybe to try and, you know, bring that reflection into your life. I mean, when I was in Switzerland, there was one of the teachers there. He gave these week-long, it was sort of like a retreat. It was a bit different. That the people came together on the weekend, I think, and then they had a certain theme. You know, like something like maybe one was right speech, for example. And then they had some teachings about what right speech was, and they got some reflections on it. And then they went through their everyday life. Went back to work, came back to their families, and they'd meet in the evening for 1 hour of the meditation, and then they would give some, you know, try and be a bit more clear about that particular theme in the course of their life. For a whole week. Just working on that one theme as it was manifesting within their life, in everyday life. Not on a retreat, specialized retreat environment. And they had some very, very important insights. And it actually became quite a popular form of the retreat, actually. Because many of the people had done these formal, you know, organized retreats, 10 days in silence, you know, but, you know, not so much arises in silence, does it? Huh? Well, sometimes. But imagine trying to bring that reflection and that little bit more collectedness and clarity to your everyday life situation. That's where you really have to deal with things as they really happen. So it became a very, very important and very useful form of retreat. People found it very helpful for them to bring that meditation themes into their ordinary life situation, because that's where they have to be most of the time. You can only be on retreat for, you know, so many days a year, but the other 300 and whatever it is, 60 days of the year, back in ordinary life. So to bring some more collectiveness and clarity to those areas of our life is much more useful in the long term anyway. So the theme of the five hindrances then is not too depressing, is it? Okay. See who comes back next week for the second. So next week is the sense desires. That's really interesting. So hopefully you can do your homework and it becomes more relevant. It's just not an exercise in intellectual inquiry, but it actually becomes more a relevant experience for you. What's really happening? What is sense desire? And how does it affect you practically, not just intellectually?